Well, I'm Illinois State Controller Susana Mendoza. As Daphne mentioned, the state's chief financial officer, and I'm in charge of paying the state's bills and managing all of the state's funds. We have a $55 billion budget. And also advocating for things that I really care about, like fiscal transparency. It's more than a buzzword for me. It's really like what I do every day in this office. And I'm responsible for managing, of course, how the government spends its money. And I'm always talking about this whenever I can. So a bit of a numbers nerd. Now, I am a proud American, and as she mentioned, a proud daughter of Mexican immigrants. And I know you heard she mentioned, I was going to say this, but I'll repeat it again. First Hispanic independently elected statewide, the first woman elected city clerk of Chicago, and the youngest member of the 92nd General Assembly. When I was sworn in as a state rep, I served six terms, actually, as state representative. But I say this not because it's cool to like be the first. It is. It's not like I was trying to be. It just happened to be. But it's more important, and I much more would prefer to say I'm the first of many. So thank you again for being here today to hear me share a few thoughts with you. You know, many of us know what it's like to come from humble beginnings and to have to fight for recognition and, frankly, our place at the table. We all deserve to have a place at that table, whether it be in the boardroom or on the local school board. But where do you start? It's a question I think a lot of us ask is, how do we get civically engaged? Where do we start? You know, you feel like you have something to say, or you have ideas for improvements or change. Well, if so, getting involved in your community is an awesome way to make your voice heard. One of my earliest memories of taking action was, truthfully, with the help of my own family when I was little. I grew up in a household where I was encouraged to dream big. And at the age of seven, the ripe old age of seven, I started playing soccer, which turned out to be my first true love. There were no girls, though, playing soccer, especially travel soccer at that time. But my dad, this proud Mexican man, signed me up to play anyway. So cool. And I was the first girl on my travel boys soccer team. Yes. And I played on boys' travel teams up until high school. Yep, as the only girl, by the way, on the team. Now, at that point, the rules, this is in high school, prohibited girls from playing on boys' school teams and vice versa. Now, my teammates, they actually wanted me on the team, so when I went to try out, that's when we found out that I couldn't. And they were all like, hey, that's not right. She's awesome. She's a part of our team. I've grown up playing with many of these boys who were going to be on the high school team. And it was so fun to see that they stood up for me. But the principal had to get involved, made us aware of these rules. And he said that personally he didn't have a problem with me playing on the boys' team, but that we would have to forfeit every game that I played on because it was against the actual school, not school, but the whole entire sectional and the state rules at the time. So my dad contacted the ACLU on the recommendation of the principal. This was like one of those weird test cases where they're like, let's try this out. And my father and my mom, you know, they're both from Mexico. And when the principal said we should call the ACLU, he's like, what's that? And then when he said, this is a good potential lawsuit, my father's like, we're Mexican, we don't sue anybody. Like, we're not litigious at all. But the principal recommended we reach out to them and to test out this case. But it turned out that at the time there was currently a court case that the ACLU was in fact representing that dealt with a different girl in the same conference who it wanted to play on the boys' team in a rival school. So I ended up playing volleyball that year, that my freshman year, while this litigation played out in the courts. And I'm very proud to say that she won. She won the case. And it said that in the absence of a school offering, like, for example, a girls' team, then the girls would be allowed to play with the boys and vice versa. And so in 1987, I'm very proud to say that I was a founding member of the first women's soccer team at Bolingbrook High School. Yeah. the point here is that we got involved, we didn't take no for an answer, and we got it done. So ladies, I'm just happy to share with you that I have truly enjoyed kicking balls around since I was a little girl, and not much has changed since then. Now, as far as my start in politics, yes, there's a lot of that going on, yes. It wasn't something that I was expecting. I grew up in a household where, again, my parents were Mexican immigrants. They didn't trust politicians. And after graduating, I never took a poli sci course in college. I just wanted to get to work, and I studied business and advertising, and I wanted to work in an advertising firm. Now, I'd moved back to my neighborhood of birth, which was Little Village, La Villita. And I moved back right upon graduating college. And that's where I really wanted to get involved, make a difference, but never thinking from a political perspective. I actually rounded up a bunch of local kids on my block and taught them how important it was to keep our neighborhood clean. And we'd go out every Thursday, pick up all the trash around the neighborhood, and then I'd kick the ball around with them and show them some cool moves. But one day, my dad picked me up from work, and he gave me a stack of mail to read while I was in the car with him. And he was just running a quick errand at Jewel. And for Chicagoans, we say at Jewel's, you know, yes. But anyway, I was in the car, I saw this mailer, and it was a bilingual campaign flyer that really brutalized the opponent, but it was all in Spanish. It was a bilingual piece, but all of the mistakes were in Spanish. And it really caught my attention because if you ever talk to anyone in my staff, they're gonna tell you that I have like an eagle eye, an obsessive eye at spotting typos from a mile away. And I was such a nerd that I literally pulled out a yellow highlighter while I was in the car, and I highlighted all the mistakes. And when my dad got back, I said, "Papi, look at this. This is crazy. Here's a guy who is trying to win our vote. He's speaking to the Latino community, and he doesn't take the time to prove for his work. And if this is the kind of attention he's giving us before he's even elected, you know, what can we expect should he win? I'm gonna call this guy and I'm gonna tell him that I'm not gonna vote for him because he can't even spell." And then my dad, who like distrusted all politicians, he says to me, "No, you know what you should do is you should call the other guy and volunteer to help him." Yes, I know, I thought the same thing. It was almost like divine intervention. So anyway, what did I do? I called him. And somehow, and I guess this is where divine intervention comes in, it's like 9 o'clock at night. And I call the state representative's office and he answers. Well, not him, someone that works for him. But my point is they were working hard. And I said I was the concerned resident of the 12th ward. I had just moved in from Missouri, going to school to play soccer and academics out there. And I didn't know what a ward was. I didn't, you know, wasn't interested in politics. But here I am with this potential opportunity to share my ideas on how to turn this negative publicity into positive. And if he decided to do a rebuttal piece, I wanted a stab at it. So I called him and I told him all this. He originally got defensive thinking that I was calling to beat him up, but it turns out that I told him, "No, I actually want to help. And you know, I'd love to show you my work. And if you use it for a portfolio, for an ad firm." Now, it turns out he was silent in that call. And I thought he like hung up on me. I'm like, "Hello, hello." And he said, "I need to meet you. Can you come by my office tomorrow?" And I was like, "Of course." This is way before GPS. No, like Google. I had to 411 it to call him. For you old enough, Laura, you'll know what I mean. If you've been here 25 years, you don't look it though, I'm just saying. But I 411'd it and got connected. And then of course, my father, he says it's so important to be on time. Let's go drive out there so we're not late tomorrow. But the crazy part of the story is I'm like 22 and I take my dad to this place because in my mind, I'm thinking, this guy was so nice. But then of course, like, the cynic comes out in you, and I'm like, he's probably some like super creepy old dude who might be like trying to chase me around the desk. College graduate, you know? And I better take my dad. So, you know, different times. But in any event, took my dad, you know, he loved him, and he says to me, "You know, I don't need to use your rebuttal piece. I was up all night, by the way. No computer. I went to Kinko's, old school. There till like 2 a.m. doing a rebuttal piece, and it was my first stab at anything political. And I showed it to him. He loved it, but he said, I'm not going to use it, but I needed to meet you because your phone call was so out of the ordinary for me. And I thought, wow, what an initiative to like call and put yourself out there like that. And I said, I need to meet you. So he's like, look, I can't guarantee you a job, but I have friends in the advertising business. And, you know, I'm not going to promise you a job, but I'm sure I can get you an interview. And I said, look, I didn't come here to ask for a job. I just came here to show you my work. And if you decided to use it, to be able to take credit for it in my portfolio. And he says, I know you didn't come here asking for anything, but I'm in a position to help and I want to help. He goes, so I can't guarantee you a job, but I'm sure I can arrange an interview. And then I, of course, said, well, if you get me the interview, I'm getting that job. And I did get the job. And, you know, I like to share this story, and I don't get to share it all the time, but I figured this was a good group because Daphne told me she wanted me to talk about just getting civically engaged in different ways, maybe like my story of how all this started. And this story is important because, truthfully, making that phone call, deciding to make that phone call, changed the entire trajectory of my life and certainly my life in public service. You know, it was truly the most meaningful step that I ever took towards starting my civic engagement and, again, leading to my life in public service. It exposed me to politics, to politicians that cared, and that eventually required, I should really say, like, it made me, it inspired me to run for office at the ripe old age of 25. And now, when I first ran for that position back in 1998, you know, 25 today sounds like no big deal. We have a lot of young people in office. But when I ran, there were no young people in office. I was like a complete anomaly, no reason to think that I could win. People thought it was cute that I was going door to door. But I only lost that first race by 55 votes against an incumbent. Yeah, and it you know, it was depressing for like a half hour. I was really upset, and then I thought, no, you know, I almost beat an incumbent. There are all these people that did vote for a 25-year-old because they saw me working so hard. And I bet you a lot of people thought I had no chance and probably just stayed home and didn't vote. But when I only lost by 55 votes, it taught me the importance of the vote, which is a really key part of civic engagement. But it also, that loss, I think, I thank God for it every day because had I won at 25, I might be incorrigible, right? I might like have the biggest ego in the world. I'm sure there's people who think I do anyway, but imagine if I had won in the first time out of the gate. So I think it was very humbling, but it also like cemented in me that this is in fact what I wanted to do, that I love people, that I love campaigning, and most importantly, if I get the chance to do it, I'm gonna crush it in the actual job. And so that was always my mentality. Maybe it became my new soccer, right? I stopped playing after college. And this became my new love and my new focus. And so, again, it was taking that initiative of getting involved. And losing that election, as I said, it was a bummer, but I share that story too. It's important to focus not just on our wins, but on our losses, on these moments of failure that are only, in fact, failure if we don't learn from them and if we're afraid to take on risk. So I would say to people that you should always be brave in the face of deciding whether or not to take risks. I mean, just about every great leader has failed monumentally at something that they really wanted, whether it was in the corporate space, in the personal space, in the political space. I mean, from the political perspective, we all know President Obama, and he lost a really bad race against a congressional candidate. I think it was Bobby Rush, right, at the time. And Mayor Daley, you know, the son of the most famous mayor of Chicago, lost his first race for mayor and then went on to become mayor for a long, 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 long time. And so it's what you do in the face of the failure that matters. And I won that second time when I ran 2 years later. I campaigned nonstop for 2 years. I literally did not go on a single date for 2 years. It was an insane amount of focus because I wanted to prove every single person that did vote for me that they were right. And to prove all those who didn't that they get a second shot at it. And they should, you know, invest in my candidacy with their vote and their trust. And that if I had that privilege, I would not let them down. And so I've never been afraid to take risks. And I would say to all of you, don't ever be afraid to fail. And I always tell kids and also, you know, adults, because we all get scared at trying something that might be new territory for us, but that we have already failed if we decide not to try to pursue something that we really wanted, right? That's the biggest failure of all, is thinking, maybe I could have done it, maybe I could have, what if? The what if is always worse than the what is, even if the what is wasn't what you wanted on day one. So now this is where I think we, talking to each other as ladies, really come in, because we need to support each other. We need to cheer on each other's successes without jealousy, right? And we need to really empathize when we don't hit those markers that we want to hit. Think about each other on how we can comfort each other, how we can lift each other up in those moments of, you know, faltering, but always reminding each other that you won by taking the risk and that you're going to learn something from that, and you should think on the positive aspects of what it took for you to try, get there, maybe not get there on the first shot, but keep trying, right? This is always what we can do for each other in those moments. It's really important to show each other and ourselves some grace every now and then. Now, many of us in this room here are leaders. We are very confident in our path forward and ready to get things done. Let's do this. I think that's our mantra for most people in this room, if not all of us, that there's nothing that can stop us. But others prefer to take more of a balanced role, maybe a more backseat role, be ready and eager to be led and to work for those people who want to be out front and leading, right? So all of us have a role to play, whether it's the face of the operation or the heart of the operation, as I say too, right? Because good leaders know how to identify great staff, how to get the best out of people in every capacity, how to find what you're really, really great at and inspire you to keep going on that lane, right? Not trying to force a ball into a square peg, finding where that ball fits in the right hole. So I think that there's so many different ways that we should identify what we're all good at and then figure out how we can put all those pieces of the puzzle together. Because I think that under the guidance of a strong but patient leader, we are all much more capable and confident about getting civically engaged or engaged in whatever it is that you care about. But today I did want to talk a little bit about this aspect of civic engagement and why it's so important. Now, you'll see this dynamic everywhere, from small fundraisers at your child's school to huge projects at a large corporation. There's a role that all of us stand to play in getting the ball to the end zone, or I should say, shooting in the upper left corner and scoring a goal. But understanding, I guess, where you fall in this leadership style is important in really choosing how to civically engage. Now, it's also important to realize that getting active in your community can often be a thankless job. Many won't care about the long hours that you've put into an event or a meeting, or how long it took to organize something. I mean, the people who organize this event right now, raise your hand. Okay, like you're the lone soldier over there. Thank you, big round of applause. Yes, there's probably a few more, but they're like, I don't wanna like acknowledge it. But this is the thing, like none of these things are possible without the people who are behind the scenes. And so thank you for that, because it does take a lot of work. You don't get the credit. You often don't get the thank you, but that's not why you do it, right? You do it because it's important and you're mission driven and you find passion and love in what you do. You may face pushback from administrators who don't appreciate your vision in whatever role you're in, or volunteers who don't like how you run things and think they can do it better, right? These are all things that happen to us every day. But none of those things, none of the negativity in the space that we love or want to be in, should discourage any of you from taking meaningful steps towards civic engagement. Now, serving in your area isn't just about sitting on a committee or helping with a local fundraiser. Sometimes it's about standing up to bullies, My two older brothers, Joaquin and Carlos, taught me how to stand up to bullies when I was about 6 years old, and I've been doing it ever since. That's right. I don't think I've ever told this story in public, but it's pretty funny. All right, so I don't know if any of you remember this case because it was back in 2017, and that seems like an eternity ago, pre-COVID, right? But I was out for a family bike ride with my husband and our four-year-old son. And when I saw this big, huge, like Ford pickup truck just barrel through a red light, and it came so close to hitting me, like I literally, like my bike went like this, right? Thank God it didn't hit me, but it went on to cause a multi-car crash just up ahead. So I rode my bike on up to the scene, and I wanted to make sure everybody was okay because the driver was trying to get away. And I put my bike like right in front of the truck, and I whipped out my cell phone. I told my husband, please get over to the side of the road, because he had the Burley, right? It was just kind of weird. I was by myself. My husband had our son in the little Burley. And so I just wanted him out of the way. I'm literally crazy with my bike in front of this gigantic pickup truck, right? But I didn't think about it. And I whipped out my phone and I started recording him and I told him to stay put. And I was calling the police. And there was no way in hell that I was going to let this guy leave the scene. This is what was in my mind. Now, he definitely appeared drunk. And he was also posing as a police officer. And I know this because I didn't know at the time, but he eventually did, like, you know, skirt around us. There was this guy who was one of the victims in the car crash who literally, he was like T.J. Hooker. And he, Laura, you understand what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. So he was like T.J. Hooker, and he like jumps into the back of the pickup truck, and I'm screaming in Spanish, you know, don't do it, jump off, because, you know, this guy clearly is a madman, lunatic, and he could have hurt himself by doing that. So long story short, I follow the guy, and then he gets out of the truck, and he's like, you know, staggering and walking very unbalanced, and it's this big dude. I'm not that big, but I was so fired up, you know, and I'm like, what a jerk. And I follow him into this 7-Eleven. I don't know if it was a 7-Eleven. It's like an Amoco with a Dunkin' Donuts. But anyway, I walk in. First, I go into his car because I'm like, maybe he left the car keys, you know, in the ignition because he was drunk. And then they're not in there, and I'm like, darn it. So I follow him, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, does he have him anywhere within sight? Because I'll just snatch him and take off running because he'll never catch me, right? This is what I'm thinking. And then I eventually am like, darn it, I don't see the keys, they're not in the car. So I follow him into this little convenience store, and I'm videotaping him, and I'm, you know, telling the police, like, here's where he's at. And then he's like, I am the police. And I'm like, no, you're not. And and eventually I say cheese, I have you on video. Now this say cheese became a little bit famous because there was a reporter in Chicago who heard about this. And I didn't tell anybody about this story, true story, because I was so embarrassed at my voice on that audio when I'm saying, get out of the car, don't do it. It was like the worst. But my staff, I got notification from one of the officers on the scene that this person had a hearing coming up. This is like on a Friday, and the hearing was on a Monday. And I was supposed to be in Springfield on a Monday, and my legal team and my press team, they always go with me everywhere, right? So, especially to Springfield. So all of a sudden, I switch it up. And I say I have to go to court in the calendar. And then my staff, of course, instead of going like, oh, cool, why do you have to go to court? They're like, why do you have to go to court? And I'm like, no, I'm not one of those politicians. But they're like, we're supposed to go to Springfield. Why are you going to court? And why do we not know about this? And then I sat them down and I said, well, because this is what happened. And I want to show up to the hearing and show support to these victims, right? And my staff is like, hold on a second. You have video of this? And I'm like, yes, but it's so embarrassing. And Abden Palish is my comms director. He's like, I have to see this video. And I'm like, no, it's so bad. And so anyway, the video is actually great, except for my screechy voice. And we give it to the state's attorney and, you know, shared it with the press, but only because my press guy took it like 3 months after this whole thing happened, or two, 3 months after. And it blew up in the press back in 2017. And the reason it blew up is because the guy that I busted was John Quarters Boyle. Do any of you know who that is? So this guy, John Quarters Boyle, had already been in prison twice for stealing $4 million worth of quarters from the Illinois tollway, the highway, right? The tolls, Illinois tollway. And as part of the hired truck scandal that happened under Mayor Daley. So he had been in jail on multiple occasions, totally mob connected. And this guy that I got on videotape, and I caught him actually getting back in the car and turning left totally in a super dangerous way on camera before the cops were able to get there. I got him. I mean, it was so great. Yeah, the bummer of this story is that under our prior state's attorney, this case went on for over a year. I went to every single court hearing, and it eventually lost the attention of the press, and then they eventually dropped charges. And he got off with like a little tiny fine, slap on the wrist, and I just thought, this is so completely messed up. And so I will tell you that it was super disappointing, but I was more than happy to bust his ass and stand up for the victims in that car crash. And this is more importantly why it's critical that we all, in our own way, step up civically, right? Get involved in helping. I did, I'm very proud to say this, I was very active in helping get a new state's attorney elected for Cook County. Because I've always felt that our state's attorney's office should always be looking at pursuing crime from the vantage point of the victim. And that guys like this guy, a super connected mob guy who had already violated Illinois' trust so many times, I served it up on a silver platter. I went to every hearing and it was still like, no big deal, move on, right? And so this is where it matters, whether you sit on the fence, you sit it out, or you get involved. And the easiest way, literally the easiest way that anyone in this room or outside of this room could choose to get civically engaged is to vote, right? It's painless. You get almost a month to do it. There is no excuse. And frankly, not enough people do it. And if they did, we'd be living in a very different society, right? So I do think that at the end of the day, we can talk about all these other ways of getting civically engaged. But if you haven't exercised your most basic fundamental duty, I won't even call it a right, I think it's a duty of being a citizen to vote, then you are part of the problem in our cities, in our country, and I don't want anybody in this room to ever be a part of the problem. We always want to be a part of the solution. All right, now helping out and making changes in your community is also clearly about connections. You have a very special opportunity today to not just network, but to speak to each other about your passions, your career, or your goals, and just really to listen. It's often comforting to hear stories of the obstacles that we all face. We have a lot of commonalities there, and how others have handled those situations. Today shouldn't just be about shaking hands, getting hugs. I'm a big hugger. Stating your name, your occupation, maybe handing out a business card that someone might, you know, not file properly. It's a very nice way of saying it could end up in the trash. Don't do that. I now just give out a QR code because, yeah, I just feel bad. But anyway, I urge you all to really take the time to get to know one another, have meaningful conversations with each other, really try to connect, not just today, but in future get-togethers as well. This is an amazing network. I mean, just look around. And I bet a lot of you kind of feel like unicorns sometimes. In this room, we feel super supported. We feel, you know, seen. We feel heard. And then you walk out of here into like a different type of herd. And sometimes we feel lost. So this is an opportunity for all of us to really get to know each other, to build a sisterhood, to connect on many levels, and to be there for each other, and to not stop here, right? Let's keep this going. One of the things that I love most about my job as controller has been getting the opportunity to travel the entire state of Illinois. We are standing right now, I'm standing, you're sitting, in what I think is the most beautiful city in America. One of the most beautiful cities in the world. But my travels as your controller have taken me all over. I've fallen in love with places like Southern Illinois. I've made lasting bonds. And I've done things like zip lining, cave hopping, all kinds of cool things, but also meeting rural pharmacies, seeing where people are struggling and suffering and how I can help. And so my point is to tell you to get out of your comfort zone as well. You might fall in love with something that you never thought would be something of interest to you, and you might find a new passion and new connections and just keep that going. So I'm going to wrap up by just saying thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of today's Professional Women's Club of Chicago Networking Luncheon. It's always a pleasure to be with you.